Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
Last month, the U.S. Congress passed a bill that could force the Chinese owner of TikTok, a short-form video app, to sell its assets or face a ban. Our federal government is also currently undertaking a national security review of the app. So, what should be done with TikTok? Is it a looming national security threat? Or a harmless app filled with fun videos? And should Canada ban it? Let's consider that with, in Oliver, British Columbia, Taylor Owen, director of the Center for Media, Technology and Democracy at McGill University and co-host of the TVO podcast Screen Time. In Brooklyn, New York, Jamil Jaffer, executive director of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. And here in our studio, Janice Stein, the Bellsberg Professor of Conflict Management in the Department of Political Science, founding director of the Monk School of Global Affairs and Public Policy at the University of Toronto. And Connor Healy is here, Director of Government Research at the Security Technology Research Group, IPVM. And it's good to have you two here in our studio. You have been absent from here for far too long, so it's great to see you again, Professor Stein. And to Jamil and Taylor in Points Beyond, thanks for joining us. Before we get to the discussion about a possible ban, let's just first, I think, better understand the risks as you see them related to TikTok. So, Jamil, get us started. How would you characterize the security threat that you believe, or don't, TikTok represents?
Well, I think that TikTok does represent a security threat in a particular sense. I think all social media platforms do. Social media platforms collect a huge amount of information about their users, and that's certainly true of TikTok. TikTok maybe raises additional concerns because of its connection to the Chinese government, or its possible connection to the Chinese government. I think the real question is not whether TikTok presents a threat, but rather what the best way is of addressing it.
Which we shall do. Taylor, how would you answer the question?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of depends how we define a risk and a national security threat. I mean, there's certainly a capacity on these platforms to shape discourse and influence discourse, as we've seen in elections, previous elections on other platforms. There's clear potential abuses of data, as Jamil mentioned. There's a whole host of broader sort of health, public health issues that we could bring into our national security conversation, although I would sort of warn not to. But there's also economic interest here. And the U.S. government, whose bill or legislation we're talking about, has a long history of incorporating economic power and interests into their national security threat assessments, which is clearly happening here, too.
Janice, do you see a genuine national security threat to Canada here?
I agree with Taylor. Of course, there's a security threat. Anytime you agglomerate and collect data in the way that all social media platforms do, the fact that it's owned by China, and there is no separation, adds an extra dimension. But on the spectrum of national security threats from China, this is at the very low end of the spectrum. And that's, I think, the bigger story. There are many more serious ones.
Connor.
I think those who study China understand that the distinction between a corporation and the government's interests is a legal fiction. In other words, it exists on paper, but not in fact. And what that means is that TikTok, its owner ByteDance, is controlled by a group of data kleptomaniacs. And they should not be within a mile of controlling such a platform. The worst thing that American social media companies, and they absolutely should be reined in, the worst thing they're going to do really is try to sell you something. With TikTok, the threats are far greater.
Let's follow up on the data angle. We are told that a quarter of Canadians use TikTok. So, Taylor, follow up on that. What sort of data can be mined given that reality?
Well, it's the same kind of data that can be mined by any a large social platform that acts as an intermediary between our devices, mostly our phone, and our commercial and daily social activity on the internet. So it's the things we purchase, where we go, our faces in terms of facial recognition technologies that are embedded in these tools, our political beliefs, our political engagement and activity. I mean, it is a lot about us, which is why many people have been arguing for clamping down on some of those data collection capacities from a broad range of platforms. The question here is, I think what Connor mentioned, like, is there something different about this company collecting these data? And I think that's at the core of some of these issues.
All right, Connor, play it out. What concerns do you have about how that data, whatever, could be used?
Well, that data could be used to understand what individual Canadians think and also what the Canadian population thinks. I mean, I think China has made it quite clear, you know, due to a number of incidents that they want to basically bulldoze our democracy. And TikTok could be a very useful tool for that. It's not just about data access, by the way. It's also just about access to users. You know, unlike data brokers, who, sure, they could sell the Chinese government data. You know, you're scrolling on TikTok hours a day. You're not doing that with data brokers. And they can test things out. They can algorithmically target people. That's a significant risk for a government like China that is an autocracy. Autocracies, you know, shouldn't be running major information platforms.
Jamil, play that out for us. Targeting people, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Connor has made a really important point, but in a parenthetical. The kind of data that TikTok collects is data that you can get easily from data brokers. Anybody who wants this kind of data about Americans can buy it from data aggregators and data brokers who have essentially no restrictions on what they can take from social media companies and what they can share, including with foreign governments. And that, I think, is, you know, a real concern here, is that this even if you think, you know, as I do, that TikTok's collection of this kind of data is a real problem, a real threat, you have to ask, is this ban going to be effective? And I don't think it is going to be effective, because the same kind of information that TikTok collects is so easily available from data brokers. And security experts across the United States have said that, including the former general counsel of the National Security Agency, who said it in an op-ed in the New York Times late last year. So this is really not a contested point. Everybody recognizes that this kind of data is easily available from data brokers, and that this ban is not going to make a real dent in the Chinese government's ability to surveil Americans or Canadians or anyone else.
Janice, we're all operating here, or at least all of you are operating on the 100% certainty that the Chinese government has access to everything that TikTok picks up on. Is that a given?
I think we have to, I think we make that worst case assumption, Steve, and then still come to the conclusion that the data that ByteDance collects, they can get many, many other ways. And that's what made me put it relatively low down the spectrum. Connor's point that they can try things out, well, frankly, if I were looking for threats to democracy, I would be just as concerned about what's on X, destabilizing democracy and some of our other social media platforms. And any government in the world can, in fact, and we saw this with Facebook, access American social media platforms and try things out. So I'm still waiting to hear concrete reason why a ban would be effective.
Are you suggesting, Connor, that TikTok is more nefarious than X or Facebook simply because of the Chinese ownership, or is there more to it than that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the standard that's already established in Canada under the Investment Canada Act is that foreign ownership by a company like China, if it's likely to be abused, that is sufficient for the Minister of Industry to bring a forced divestiture to the cabinet. He doesn't need evidence that it has been abused. Just like we wouldn't need evidence that China would abuse ownership of this TV station if it happened to have it, or would mismanage Ontario's nuclear power plants. I mean, that's the level of power that we're talking about when it comes to TikTok. And I think a fundamental disconnect here, by the way, I completely agree that we need to rein in the behavior of social media companies like X and Facebook. We should absolutely do that. But we can rein in that behavior. How do you intend to deliver a subpoena to ByteDance in Beijing? And what do you think they're going to do with it? You cannot enforce privacy legislation on ByteDance. That would be like trying to teach a fish to climb a tree.
Okay, Jamil, you want to comment on the, not the fish climbing the tree part, but the rest of what Connor had to say?
So I guess I disagree with Connor on this point. I think that there are ways of enforcing privacy regulation. You can, for example, have data localization mandates that require companies like TikTok to store the data they're collecting about a particular set of people in that country. And this is something that US regulators have been, exploring already, and TikTok claims to be storing American data now in the United States. I don't know if that's true. But it's something that can be verified and something that can be enforced. I guess the other thing I would just say on this point is that there is a free speech concern on the other side. It's not just that this ban would be ineffective. It's also that the ban would be a restriction on the ability of Canadians or Americans to access foreign media. And that that kind of practice, restricting citizens from accessing foreign media, is something that, for very good reason, has been associated in the past with repressive regimes like the Chinese Communist Party or, Iran or Saudi Arabia. Those are the kinds of countries that restrict their citizens from accessing foreign media. And I'm not saying that there are no circumstances in which a democracy should restrict its citizens from accessing foreign media, but we should be pretty wary, I think, about going down that road. And we shouldn't do it when there are other ways of addressing the problem.
That's an angle I was going to get to later, but since we're here, you want to weigh in on that as well? Is this an infringement on free speech?
There's no question. There's no question it's an infringement on free speech. And there has to be a higher standard of security risk when there's an infringement on free speech. It's not that we never do it. Of course, there are circumstances in which we did it. So let me give you an example where I think there's a much stronger case to take action, which was Huawei, as distinct from TikTok. The reason there's a much stronger case on Huawei is the government, part of the government's digital infrastructure, what the government called the core, was being built by Huawei. Well, it makes no sense to allow core digital infrastructure to be built by a company that is run out of China.
But this isn't that.
That's what I'm saying. This is, in fact, an entirely different proposition with TikTok, where you can get the data anyway. The argument of experimentation is just not persuasive. And I think, on balance, then, Jamal's argument about free speech really matters.
Connor, no concerns about an infringement on free speech here?
I mean, I agreed with the restrictions on Huawei. I think to suggest that Huawei was clearly more of a threat than TikTok really signals a failure of imagination when it comes to how destructive social media can be when directed to divide citizens or deliver messages that are undermining our democracy. I do see the free speech argument. I'm concerned about that. I think this should be, as narrowly tailored as possible. But basically, my sense is that sort of no matter what road you go down here, you end up with a forced divestiture, whether that's privacy legislation, whether that's trying to take a more narrowly tailored approach. I mean, take the algorithm, for instance. Sure, you could have TikTok store data in the US or store data in Canada, but ByteDance is ultimately going to control the algorithm, and it ultimately is going to control TikTok. And we won't be able to enforce any of these rules. And then we'll end up in a place where the only option left is divestiture. And all we've done is we've wasted years and quite a lot of legal fees to end up at the same result.
Taylor, free speech concerns for you?
Of course, there are to some degree. This is the platform in which people express themselves, and we consume that expression. And look, we have one of the world's top First Amendment and free expression legal scholars on the call, so I'm not going to wade into that discussion fully. But to Janice's point about the bar here, I mean, obviously, we are okay already with the bar of banning TikTok on government devices, and my university has also banned me from having TikTok on my university phone. Now, why is that, right? Well, it's clearly there's some perception of IP risk or infringement of sort of data that we have in the university system, and certainly the government thinks there's some risk. So they're willing to limit the free expression and free ability to free consume from their workers. So the bar is clearly the important measure here.
Yeah.
But I'd be asking a couple broader questions. I mean, one is, what makes TikTok different than broadcast media, other broadcast media, which we've certainly regulated in the past in terms of what we allow into our domestic airwaves. In many ways, TikTok is more like broadcast media than what we traditionally think of as social media, in the sense that when we open a TikTok feed, we're seeing a highly filtered stream of content, where a very small number of people pieces of content every day get seen and consumed in almost a broadcast way by people who are watching TikTok, not participating in it. And I think that's a really key differential here when we're thinking of whether we regulate this as a social platform or as a broadcast media. The last thing I'd phrase to say here is that, I think we need to ask why this is the first piece of federal legislation regarding digital platforms in the U.S. that we've seen in the last 20 years of social platforms. And it just happens to be the one that is also being heavily lobbied for by the U.S. tech industry.
Yeah.
And has this element of protectionist and jingoism in it that makes me pretty uncomfortable, I have to say, for many of the reasons Jamil mentions.
I'm
very glad Taylor made that point, because we alluded briefly to the economic arguments. There are really powerful economic forces here that are pushing this legislation in the U.S. Congress. And it's actually too bad that Canada just follows in its wake this way. Meta, Facebook's lunch is being eaten by TikTok. Just look at the graphs. Instagram, it is about to overtake these. These companies have gone all out. They are very powerful monopolist players, and they have launched a lobbying campaign that's absolutely unprecedented, Steve. So to classify this wholly as a national security issue, it's just not correct. And that's why really understanding the bar, being really careful about articulating the risk, even hypothetically, what is the risk, and getting some evidence that that risk is grounded, is fundamentally important.
Let me get Jamil on that, though. To the best that I can tell, whenever anybody from Facebook or Meta or X comes before Congress, the representatives or the senators can't stand them. They really put them through their paces. So why would they be doing the bidding of those groups by helping to ban TikTok?
It is true that some of the leaders of these social media companies have been interrogated pretty aggressively by Congress. It is also true that Congress has not passed any regulation whatsoever to constrain the activities of social media platforms. So, there's a kind of rhetorical position, and then there's a substantive position, and those are two completely different things. But I wanted to address, maybe this is going to be a slightly more controversial point, but address the concern that TikTok is spreading Chinese propaganda or might spread Chinese propaganda in the future. I have no way of evaluating that, concern. I agree that, it's conceivable that TikTok might, that the Chinese government might use TikTok in that way at some point, even if it's not doing it now. But let's assume for a second that, imagine that the Chinese government says tomorrow that from now on, TikTok is just going to be Chinese propaganda 24 hours a day. Let's just assume there's no question that all TikTok is Chinese propaganda. There's still, I think, a really important free speech principle here. Citizens of an open society, of a democracy, have the right to access propaganda if they want to. This came up at the U.S. Supreme Court 50 years ago, I guess 60 years ago now, in a case called Lamont versus Postmaster General. I won't give you the whole, the whole story, but the short story is there was a law that required people to register before receiving communist propaganda from abroad. They were allowed to receive it by mail, but they had to register with the post office in order to do it. And the Supreme Court here in the U.S. struck that law down on the grounds that it was an unjustifiable interference with the right of American citizens to access ideas from abroad. And I think that's exactly the right decision. As Taylor knows, I'm not enthusiastic about everything that the U.S. Supreme Court does on free speech. I'm not a kind of sort of blind champion of the First Amendment, but I think this is a really important principle that the U.S. Supreme Court recognized in that case 60 years ago. And I think that would apply here too. If, even if you assume that TikTok is Chinese propaganda and only Chinese propaganda, Americans should have the right to receive that propaganda. And if the government wants to tell them it's propaganda or wants to restrict what TikTok can collect, that's one thing. But if it wants to restrict them from accessing foreign media, that I think is quite another. And for reasons we've already discussed, I think we shouldn't go down that road unless there are very, very good reasons for it. And I don't think there are here.
Connor, I want you to weigh in on this, but before you do, I want to read this from The Guardian. This was an article entitled TikTok is part of China's cognitive warfare campaign. So I'll read this excerpt, then I'll get you to comment. Sheldon, let's bring this up and I'll read along for those listening on podcast. Translated Chinese military reports suggest that warfare is shifting from destroying bodies to paralyzing and controlling the opponent's mind. We ignore this broader context at our peril. Platforms like TikTok exemplify cognitive influence by shaping the beliefs and preferences of its vast user base while collecting data and developing psychogenic profiles of its users. TikTok's algorithm has the power to mold public opinion and exploit user data to shape preferences, biases, and beliefs. Okay, fire away.
I think there is, you know, an element of scaremongering and kind of esoteric language involved in that article. But there is an underlying point, which is that we're in a sort of new age of influencing people through digital platforms. I think that if you're concerned about lobbying in favor of a TikTok divestment or a TikTok ban, you should be equally concerned about the fact that within 24 hours of this bill in the U.S. being introduced, TikTok conducted what was probably the largest, certainly the largest in terms of reach, lobbying campaign in U.S. history within 24 hours, reaching the phones of millions of people and giving them a button to call their congressman. And they did that, you know, with just a few clicks.
Did it work?
Well, it sort of backfired on them, actually. It wasn't a very good strategy. But it sure, it backfired because it made the point that TikTok is a risk, that it can so easily deliver information to people and actually try to influence U.S. legislation.
But isn't the information that it delivered entirely accurate? I mean, TikTok told its users that Congress is going to ban this platform. You should tell them not to if you don't want them to. And then some of the users did that. Isn't that entirely legitimate?
I mean, I think we could probably get into a debate about whether it's a ban or divestment, but I don't want to get hung up on the information that was in the notice. The point is the capability, not the information.
Yeah, you know, but that's the only time they've done something like that, Connor. And again, I think the context really matters.
Because this was a lobbying effort.
That's right. There was legislation before Congress, which was going to, quote, unquote, ban or divest. It doesn't matter. They, as Jamal says, you put that on your app. And it was accurate. This is what Congress was about to do. And if you don't like it, click your button. You just want a quick comment. That the Guardian piece on cognitive warfare, it's really important for viewers, Steve. Cognitive warfare, every time you read a sentence, you change your brain. Now, we could call that cognitive warfare, but that's not what we're actually talking about now. There's an argument about the Havana syndrome, right? If we're talking about biomedical or biophysical change in the brain, which is entirely different than the pernicious effects that some of us think social media has on people. Mm.
Vive la différence, you're
saying.
Vive
la différence. Again, okay. That's somebody who's just aligning these two things together and not being careful in the discriminations that they're
you
making.
Want to finish your point, Connor?
Sure. And I largely agree with that. I just want to level set. Context does matter. And the context is that the government that ultimately controls TikTok is the same one that, instead of engaging legitimately engaging in an extradition process, kidnapped two Canadians and held them hostage. It's the same one that set up police stations in Toronto instead of dealing with inconvenient things like, you know, rule of law in this country. And the list goes on and on and on. I think that context matters. It is entirely predictable that TikTok would be abused when the opportunity is right for China. The fact that it hasn't happened yet is basically irrelevant.
Well, before the clock gets too far away from us here, Jamil, come on in here and let's talk about where the rubber's hitting the road. Already, the government of Canada, I know the government of Ontario, has told all of its public servants, some of whom work here at TVO, take TikTok off your
phones.
Phones, yeah. You can't have it on your phone anymore.
I think that's smart. I agree with that policy. I think that governments have a totally different relationship to their employees than they do to their citizens. It's one thing to restrict a government employee from accessing TikTok on a government device during work hours, or something like that. And another thing to say that ordinary citizens can't access TikTok on their own devices. And I think that the bar for that second one should be much higher than the bar for the first one.
Yeah, coming back just for a moment, Steve, to Taylor's point that this is broadcast media, this same government, our government, allows satellite TV viewers in this country to watch Russian news channels. Why? Why? You could argue, by the way, that you can make stronger arguments, frankly, that they aren't manipulating Canadian public opinion. Mm. Once we go down this road, that's the real problem here. Once we go down this road, we have to set the bar very high in order to undertake this kind of activity.
Taylor, you want to make a distinction between whether it's acceptable to ban it off public servants' phones versus from everybody's phones?
I agree with Jamal. We should take it off government phones. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a clear distinction there. But it also highlights that there's also a clear vulnerability that we need to take seriously. And the question is where that line is.
And you,
it's possible that social media companies, platforms generally should be off limits for government employees.
So you'd add X and Facebook and Instagram to that list as well.
I don't think I'd complain about it.
Okay. Except whoever is filming President Biden's TikTok videos.
Yeah. Very good.
What's really interesting as we're talking about this again, because I'm always looking for the evidence. There was a data breach of the U.S. federal government, as we all know, in which personal data on a million and a half people was hacked. Right? Now, you can argue there's far greater risk in that. You can see that. You can see how that's going to be used. You have to ask yourself, where is the government, the U.S. government, that it didn't secure the personal data of its employees much more carefully? So, again, when I'm ranking the risks, Steve, TikTok just ain't there.
No, I hear you. But so let me give Connor equal time here in saying, obviously, you're in agreement with everybody else in terms of off government-issued cell phones.
Absolutely.
But you want this legal product banned from everybody's cell phone in Canada?
I want it to be divested from. Many American businesses have been forced to divest from their subsidiaries in China. Beijing could choose to do the same. But I accept the fact that Beijing probably won't permit a divestiture.
No, it won't.
And because of that, it would ultimately be banned. I take the point. I think people should be able to access, Russian TV and watch that. To be clear, TikTok is not where people are getting their Russian news. It's where the statistics say that more than 40% of users are getting their news. The other free speech argument here is that Chinese ownership of such a central platform for so many people actually, I think, undermines the ability for speech to be legitimate to an extent. Take the recent example of an outpouring of support for Palestine on TikTok. There are a wide range of accusations in the U.S. that was engineered by China in order to hurt U.S. interests, that they promoted pro-Palestine posts. I have no idea if that's true. I personally don't think that it is true. But the point is,
but it's plausible.
And for every other outpouring of support for every issue, we will continue to have no idea to what extent it might have been manipulated, which is why we need trusted businesses to be in control of social media platforms. Other social media platforms can't really be trusted right now, too. But by virtue of the fact that they're based in the U.S., they can be reined in, and TikTok can't.
Jamil, let me get you on this. Do you think regulation can get us far enough down the road so that an outright ban is unnecessary?
I do. I think that privacy regulation would make a huge difference on a number of different fronts, not just by directly protecting citizens' data, but also by reducing the ability of these social media platforms to micro-target messages to small communities. The way that social media companies micro-target messages is by relying on all of that data that they collect about all of us. And if they don't have that data, they can't target messages in the same way. So it would have not just a privacy implication here, but a real implication for the health of public discourse more generally, if we impose those kinds of privacy laws. The other thing I would, impose if I were in charge are transparency mandates that would make it easier for the public and researchers and regulators to understand the decisions that these platforms are making. Because right now, as Connor, I think, says entirely appropriately, these decisions are opaque to most of us. We don't know the decisions that the social media companies are making. We don't know how those companies are shaping and distorting public discourse.
Taylor, can I get you on that issue of regulation versus an outright ban?
Absolutely. I mean, as has happened time and time again, our failure to bring in broad, comprehensive data policy and digital regulations over the past 20 years leads us to a place where we contemplate far more draconian actions than are actually needed. So I would much rather begin with things like modernized data privacy law, of which the U.S. has no federal law and Canada has an inadequate one, competition policy that makes the market more fair when we have these dominant global actors participating in our digital markets. And perhaps most importantly, to Jamil's point, online harms regulation that looks at some of the clear harms of these platforms broadly defined and puts in transparency mechanisms like the new Canadian Online Harms Act does, makes them do risk assessments on their products, gives us visibility into the algorithmic systems that are deciding who sees what and when, provides AI and bot identification tools, and does a whole host of things to support and the design choices and improve the design choices of products that are used by children, which is part of the debate about TikTok here, whether we like it or not. And so, look, I think there are all sorts of ways we can raise the bar for all platforms through smart policy. And then if there's still this sort of poignant threat, national security threat, we can talk about that in a more specified way.
Let me pull one more idea out of left field here with just a few minutes to go. And that is, I don't know how many of you saw the news recently, I think it just happened last week, that a bunch of school boards in the province of Ontario have decided to band together for the purposes of suing some of the big tech companies, now admittedly those based in North America as opposed to China, but using lawsuits, maybe in the same way they used lawsuits 50 years ago against big tobacco in order to reduce the pernicious influence of tobacco. Do you think that is a potential avenue here, Janice?
Look, it's a harms issue. Right? That lawsuit raises the issue of harms to young people, which are indisputable, frankly. And I think, why are we getting these lawsuits, Steve? Because the government has failed to regulate. And government has failed to impose standards. So when you, especially in Canada, not in the United States, but especially in Canada, when you take to litigation, when you resort to litigation, it's because government has failed. We need broad-scale regulation about the algorithms, about recommender functions, about to make these social media companies much more transparent. And it doesn't take a lot. It takes Canada, Britain, the United States, and a few other governments to really get serious in real time, because you can't do it only in one jurisdiction, and collaborate internationally. And this issue almost goes away.
Connor, is a lawsuit approach in your arena?
Well, it depends on what the lawsuit requires. I mean, a major problem with a company like TikTok, as I've seen in my job with dozens of Chinese companies, is that when you try to deliver a subpoena to Beijing for information on their algorithm, they'll sort of laugh you out of the room. They likely won't comply with that.
What's going to happen when they deliver the subpoena to Meta asking for its recommender algorithms?
Meta may try to get around it, but, ultimately, a judge can force Meta to do things. And maybe they won't fully comply in the way that they should. But, you cannot enforce those rules on a company based in China. I think this is a fundamental problem. And I think that, ByteDance's leaders and China's leaders would probably be quite amused, actually, that we're making a debate about TikTok's problems, about the problems with ourselves. I support all of this privacy legislation. Mm-hmm. I think everything that has been mentioned should be implemented. But we've kind of lost the plot here.
In other words, at the end of the day, this is something we individually can solve if we want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
We choose not to. We're sucked in.
Yeah. Whereas the problems that China presents are are vastly greater. As I said earlier, go ahead.
I only cut everybody off here because we're plumb out of time, and I got to save time for the rest of the program. But I do want to thank you all for coming on to TVO tonight. Jamil Jaffer in New York City, Taylor Owen in British Columbia, Janice Stein and Connor Healy here in our studios at Young and Eglinton. Great discussion, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.